this'll be just one more story to tell.
I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast that takes a look back at my sports broadcast career. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
We welcome you back to another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental. And as Joe Tate tells you, you're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental in Seville. Andy Bulbarch and Joe Tate with you. Joe, as always, a pleasure, my friend. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up just fine, Andy. How are you doing?
Well, so far, so good. And, boy, I want to get into a topic today that I know a lot of Cleveland fans, some actually may strangely like it, but some, I'm sure, have some not-so-fond memories of the guy who donned a couple of different numbers for the Chicago Bulls, 45 and 23. I'm, of course, talking about Michael Jordan. Right now they are airing this documentary, The Last Dance, talking about Jordan and his days with the Bulls. And what, you just missed Michael Jordan in your Chicago Bulls days, didn't you?
Yes, he had not arrived when I was with the Bulls, and the Bulls, the year I was there, went 28-54. So obviously he wasn't there.
They desperately needed his arrival. That's their history speaks for itself, as they say. But, well, Joe, we're going to air some snippets of a game that you called back on May 17th of 1993. It was the Cavaliers against the Bulls in Game 4 of a playoff game, and we'll come around to it here in just a few moments. But Jordan hit a game winner that you affectionately referred to as the shot two. But, you know, what has everybody talking is the shot that you see 78 gazillion times on TV anymore is the one that he hits over Craig Elo. And, you know, that is such a painful memory if you're a Cavaliers fan. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on that first, because that was really the first Cavaliers team everybody looked at thinking that they were going to go to the NBA Finals, but Jordan hit that shot, and it's been a thorn in the side of Cavaliers fans ever since.
Well, that is true. I remember it vividly over the years. In fact, Bill Fitch told me, as you get older, you remember the losses a lot more vividly than you remember the wins, and it's true.
What kinds of things do you remember after that game? I think, you know, when the shot went down, everybody kind of remembers where they were, what they were doing. What kinds of things do you remember after that game?
I just remembered it was like all the air went right out of the building, and yours truly as well. And it was just, hey, game, set, and match. Let's get up and get out of here, because, you know, it really was a deflating experience.
Jordan provided many deflating experiences to the Cavs, no question about that. When you think about Michael Jordan, what are some things that come to mind for you?
Well, for one thing, had Ron Harper not been traded by the Cavaliers, we probably, and this is something that Jordan himself has said, he said the Cavaliers would have won at least one NBA title had Ron Harper stayed with the Cavaliers and played with that group. And he felt that Harper was one of the toughest guys he had to play against in his time going against Cleveland. So that I remember very vividly, because although I understand why ownership did it, it was a mistake. And I think in retrospect, ownership probably figures, yeah, they made a mistake on that one.
It's funny you mention that, because in one of the recent episodes of the documentary, they go through the shot, and Ron Harper tells the story about how he wanted to be the one that guarded Michael Jordan when he took said shot. But as we all know, he hit that shot over Craig Elo. But it speaks volumes about the kind of player Ron Harper was when Michael Jordan, he himself comes out and says that the Cavaliers probably could have gotten us once or twice if Harper stuck around.
Yep. There's no doubt about it. That was the thing that made the Bulls just a wee bit better than the Cavaliers in terms of the people they had on their ball club against the fellas that we had on our ball club. We had a great group of human beings. They were an outstanding group of athletes. The Bulls were just a little bit better, and Michael Jordan knew how to play that team He not only knew how to play against the Cavs, but he knew how to make his Bulls team just that much better. And, you know, he distributed game winners. He didn't take them all. Paxson got a big one. Steve Kerr got a great one. He always was able to make sure that his teammates were involved, and he had great talent for that. I think, you know, I'm not going to say that Jordan was better than LeBron James, but oftentimes LeBron had to just do it himself to get over whatever hurdle he was trying to climb, whereas Jordan realized, yeah, I can do it myself if I have to, but I've also got all these other guys who can do it as well, and so let's keep the team chemistry going well and distribute the pill, and that's exactly what he did.
He had some terrific role players alongside him, no question about that. And, you know, when everybody looks at the first shot, that, of course, took place in 1989. So the game we're going to examine here in a few moments is one that went down, as I mentioned before, in 1993. How much do you think changed with Jordan and that Bulls team? And I guess more importantly, from the Cavaliers' perspective too, how much do you think changed with the Cavaliers from that 1989 game to the May 17th, 1993 contest?
I think basically things were, you know, in the same ballpark as far as the Cavaliers were concerned. They just maybe weren't even quite as good as they were in 89 in terms of top to bottom. I'm always have to sit down and reconstruct both ball clubs. And when you're 83 years old, it's hard to do unless you want to spread out all the paperwork and get it done. And I don't particularly want to do it. So I'll just make that observation and move on.
Fair enough. And I know you've got the paperwork saved up somewhere from all of those teams for sure. And even though that was a four-year stretch, you know, it will hear some of the highlights in a little bit. You'll notice a lot of the names are the same. The two names that are not the same, we've discussed already with Danny Ferry and Ron Harper with that deal that went down. But again, we'll get to that in just a bit. In one of our previous podcasts, Joe, you had mentioned the interaction that you had at one point with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, where you basically had to get down on all fours while he was going through his calisthenics routine. Did you ever rub shoulders or come across Michael Jordan? Did you have any interaction with him?
Never did. Never did. Ironically, I used to have supper occasionally in the press room in Chicago with his father, who, of course, came to a lot of the games. And I didn't, the first two times we ate, I didn't even know who he was. He was just a nice old man who liked to talk about basketball and the weather and so on and so forth. And then, of course, tragically, he was murdered. And I found out then who I'd been talking to. And I did not know it until after the fact.
Well, Jordan's the kind of personality, I think it seems like it's really black or white with him. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of gray area. Of those that you interacted with, you know, some of the mutual acquaintances, what are some of the things they said to you about Michael Jordan and his personality?
Well, Michael was, you know, in Chicago, and of course we're talking in a much bigger community than Cleveland and LeBron. Michael had a restaurant, I know, for a while in Chicago, and it became so difficult for him to come and have a meal in his own restaurant. They actually had to build a wall in a corner of the restaurant so that Michael and his group, whoever he brought in with him, could sit and have a meal in his own restaurant and not be plagued by all of the fans who wanted to, you know, talk to him or get an autograph or just bug him. So he just, I think he was one of those guys, at least from my outside observation, that really had friends, but it was a close-knit group, and he wasn't as gregarious as LeBron, because LeBron really kind of opened himself up to kids, Akron. You know, LeBron was much more of a personality in the Cleveland, Northeastern Ohio area because that's the way he wanted to be. But LeBron also could shut it down when he really felt that he had been wronged or was tired or was concentrating on a particular task at hand, like winning that 2016 NBA championship.
Wait, can you imagine the kinds of things that you've accomplished in life when it's become so incredibly difficult to get into your own restaurant that they've got to build up a couple of walls to give you your own quarter. Just very, very strange. The kind of life that I'm sure 99.99999% of this population is never going to experience, but that's just an incredible story.
I think I can go through life and not have that experience and be very happy.
I think you and me both, there's no doubt. All right, let's step aside and let's take a quick break. We'll play these messages from Hometown Dental, and then we'll come back and we'll get into the 1993 May 17th Cavs-Bulls playoff game, Game 4, right after this.
Hi, I'm Joe Tate, here to tell you about Hometown Dental in Seville. They're my dentist, and they want to be your dentist for life. Hometown Dental offers same-day and evening hours to fit your schedule. And in emergencies like a broken tooth, they can always fit you in. All PPO insurance is accepted, and new patients are welcome. Call Hometown Dental on Center Street in Seville, or online, visit hometowndentalseville.com. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Welcome back into the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental in Seville. Andy Bulbarch and Joe Tate with you. All right, Joe, let's fast forward. Everybody knows about the shot that you hear all the time, Michael Jordan hitting it over Craig Elo. Well, in 1993, May 17th, the Cavs took on the Bulls in a playoff game. We've got some of the highlights from Game 4. And, you know, Joe, I'm not sure how much you remember of this game, but the thing that stood out to me in taking a look at some of the highlights earlier was the fact that it just felt like the Cavs were going to win. They had a double-digit lead in that fourth quarter until that doggone Jordan struck again.
Well, that is very, very true. I do know this. We won't have any highlights from Game 5 because there wasn't a Game 5. And I know somewhere in those highlights you've got the reason why.
Yes, we certainly do, and we'll play that highlight in just a moment. But to give you an idea as to just how well things were going, here's a big three ball from Terrell Brandon in the fourth quarter, the early stages of it.
Brandon comes out of the backcourt, over the timeline, between the circles. Stops, goes right wing to Elo, back out to Brandon. Brandon between the circles to the left wing. Brandon dribbling, whips the ball into Hot Rod. Hot Rod into the lane with a running right-hander off the back of the rim. No good. Rebound knocked outside. Grabbed by Danny Ferry. Clears it out to Brandon. The three in the air. Good! Brandon with seven, and the Cavaliers are up 87-77. 9:08 to play in the ball game.
When you hear that as a fan, you think to yourself, God, that particular possession, the Cavs had to do so much work in order to get a three ball from Brandon, and they go up by double digits. At that point, I think from a fan's perspective, you're thinking, okay, this one is ours. But as we know later on, Jordan struck again. Joe, as you're calling that, are you getting that same feeling?
I think so. Yeah, if I remember, I thought we were going to at least go to Game 5, and, you know, who knows what might happen after that. But, you know, the other thing that I remember listening to that, those crowds that we had out there at the Coliseum did not require all of the mechanical and electronic and all the other stupidity that they interject into NBA basketball these days, screaming, dancing, wiggling, you know, all that stuff. It was just people out there having a great time. Sounds like John Adams might have been there with the drum that day, but that was it. Everything else was just spontaneous enthusiasm from the people who were rooting for the Cavaliers, and it did not require any excess from marketing or a game presentation or any of that garbage.
You're right. I mean, it just seemed genuine, the crowd reaction. You could hear it there with the three ball from Brandon. And unfortunately for the Cavaliers, in that game, things didn't get a whole lot better. Number 23, one of the primary reasons for that. But really, you could point to a number of instances in the game, Joe, where things kind of turned. But I really kind of felt like it felt like things had really gotten out of hand when Brad Daugherty fouled out. He had 25 points in the game, but when he fouled out, you kind of felt like the bottom fell out as well.
Well, it's like the same feeling we had when Jim Jones had the broken foot between the Washington and Boston series in the Miracle Year. You knew that Nate Thurman was going to come on and do whatever he could possibly do, but he was elderly for basketball at that particular point, and you just kind of felt, oops, you know, it's going to slip away from us. And, when Doherty went down, it was kind of an omen.
Well, let's hear that highlight, or I guess in some realms it might be referred to as a low light when you kind of figure what was coming after Doherty fouled out, but here's how he fouled out.
Into the forecourt, Terrell Brannon against Armstrong on the left wing to the left sideline. He went into the air and lost the ball. Armstrong picks it up down the floor to Pippen, to Jordan, who drives, and he put it in spite of the fact that Doherty tackled him. Oh! Brad reached out and put the squeeze on Jordan. He should have sent him into about four rows up into the seats, but he gave him one of those gentlemanly squeezes, and Jordan fought right through it and scored. It's 199. Brad Doherty is fouled out of the game.
You know, one of the things that makes you so great and made you so great back then was that as I'm listening to that, it was deflating to hear what had happened. But I still got a chuckle out of the way that you described that, mentioning that Doherty should have just given him a nice little hip check and sent him four rows deep.
Yeah, well, that wasn't Brad Doherty's style. And, he tried to stop him, and I'm sure in his own mind he applied enough pressure to stop most people, but Jordan had enough to take it on and score what proved to be a very big basket.
Well, it put the Bulls ahead, and then, of course, he would go on to sink the free throw, and it would put them up by two. This game was just wildly entertaining. But, you know, as Doherty fouls out, the Cavaliers weren't totally done. They would come back to tie things because, as we'll hear here in a moment, Jordan would go on to crush the heart and soul of many Cavalier fans all across the greater Cleveland area. But, you know, in the final minute, Joe, what kind of stood out to you about the Cavaliers and who they had on the floor?
Well, the thing that stood out in my mind when we got down to that point when we had lost the double-digit lead and now it was hand-to-hand combat in the closing moments of the game, I got to believe, in fact, I know I had that feeling of, uh-oh, here it comes again. And indeed it did.
Yeah, and it was one of those games, too, where as you're watching it, you could just kind of see the avalanche coming down. And, you know, when Doherty fouled out, everybody kind of thought, you know, Doherty had a great game, 25 points, as you mentioned there in the highlight. But the Cavs kept battling without him. Now, they had an opportunity to take the lead, but then they lost the ball in their final possession. Bulls get it back. They call for a timeout with about 18 seconds to play. And then they set up this, which, again, crushed the hearts and souls of Cavalier fans all across the greater Cleveland area.
Armstrong out front with 9 seconds against Price. Into Jordan with 6 seconds. Jordan against Wilkins, lost the ball, picks it up, moves to the circle, 2 second fadeaway shot, good! Game's over, and the Bulls win. He did it again. The shot two. Michael Jordan with a fadeaway this time has 31 in the game, and Chicago wins it 103-101. Lightning strikes again at the Coliseum.
I mean, just perfectly put, lightning strikes again here at the Coliseum. And, you know, as crazy and as loud as that crowd was, Joe, I'm guessing at that point you could hear a pin drop after Jordan hit that shot.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was just one of those things. He really did give the Cavaliers a great deal of grief over the time. In fact, the one season, the Cavaliers had defeated the Bulls 6 straight times in the regular season and then lost in the playoffs. So, you know, it was one of those things where Michael would just step it up a couple of notches and we might go one notch up, but we could never get over that second notch.
And it really felt like this particular game, even though the Cavs were down in the series and this was the knockout punch, it seemed like that was kind of the last opportunity for that Cavaliers group to take down Michael Jordan. Now, it wasn't long after this where Jordan decided he was going to retire and play baseball in the prime of his career, only to come back a couple of years later. But it really felt, Joe, at the time, like this was the last chance for that group of Cavaliers to get Jordan.
Yep, you're right. Very true, very true, Andy. It was, you know, we closed out the Coliseum, we moved downtown, and then some of the guys got a little long in the tooth, and wasn't too long, and Lenny went elsewhere, and we were in the twilight zone.
That's a great way of describing that, because that group was just so special. And I know you've talked a lot about how they were just not only a great group on the floor, but they were a great group off the floor as well. Did you get a sense when that game was over that was kind of it with that group? And I know that was a tough moment for everybody, because that group was just so cool, not only in the way they played, but as you've talked about many times, the way they got out in the community. They'd go, they play pickup games out on the playground and things like that. Just so many things made that group so special.
Indeed. And, you know, in retrospect, I could sit here and say, yeah, that probably was it. But at the time, I still had hope clinging to eternal that maybe we'd get one more whack at them, but it just never really materialized.
No, and, you know, there are so many things that make Michael Jordan great, even though it's awfully tough for me to watch the documentary these days because, again, he did so many things to Cavaliers fans back in the late 80s and early 90s that just kind of makes us cringe still to this day. But, boy, Joe, what an incredible player and certainly one of the absolute best that we will ever see.
Well, as I said, when people have asked me whether I'm watching that show on ESPN, I said, I don't want to see it. I lived it. And that's exactly how I feel about it. I've had enough Michael Jordan for my lifetime. And I'm sure it's a great show. And there's things being revealed. People have told me about some of the things that are revealed that I found interesting, but not interestingly enough to watch it.
I'm right there with you. I've seen enough Michael Jordan in my lifetime as well. You've seen a lot more of him than me, but I've seen way more than enough to want to watch the documentary too. But Joe, as always, such a great trip down memory lane, even though the end result may have been painful in the highlights that we just played with that final game between the Cavaliers and the Bulls back in 1993. But always a pleasure to catch up, Joe, here on the Over the Timeline podcast.
Andy, thank you very much. All of this sure beats the heck out of working for a living. So I enjoyed my years, win, lose, or draw, with the Cavaliers, and before that with the Cleveland Indians. So I have no complaints, Michael Jordan included.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you again, Joe. That's Joe Tate joining us here on the Over the Timeline podcast. That's going to wrap things up for Joe Tate. This is Andy Bulbarch saying thanks again for tuning in to today's Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental. We'll catch you next time.